This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. April is Poetry Month, but for our guest, Philadelphia Poet Laureate Raquel Salas Rivera, whose two-year tenure began this past January, poetry is a 12-month, 24/7 thing. Raquel identifies as queer, non-binary, Puerto Rican, Philadelphian, and uses the gender-neutral pronoun they. They said that they want to build a bridge and to organize We Too Are Philly Festival this summer to celebrate the city's diverse communities and many languages. Rivera writes in Spanish first and then translates their words into English, although some words are untranslatable. They also read their poems in Spanish, even when the audience is not Spanish-speaking, because they say it's important to feel some discomfort. Their new book of poems is titled The Tertiary, and they join us on Radio Times to read some poems and to talk about poetry in their life and ours. Raquel Salas Rivera, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You've been Poet Laureate for a couple of months now. What's it been like?
I have.
What's it been like for you?
It has been unexpected, and it has been incredible. I'm very grateful. I feel that it has opened in a great deal of doors, and it's given me a platform to talk about not just what's happening in Philadelphia, but what's happening in Puerto Rico.
And what have you been talking about?
I've been talking about not just the impact of the hurricane, but the impact of the Promesa Bill, which is what my book is centered around mostly.
And we should describe for our listeners what the Promesa Bill is.
The Promesa Bill is a bill that was passed in summer of 2016, July 1st to be exact. It establishes that above the Puerto Rican legislature and the governor, there will be a control board that's going to determine the island's finances, composed of seven people hand-selected by the Democrat, the Republican parties, and the president, and that the minimum wage for everyone under 25 will be lowered to $4.25 an hour, amongst other things. Yeah,
I do want to get to Puerto Rico and you're growing up there in part, and also some of the politics as well, but I'd love to have you read one of your poems from your new book, and it's called Necessary Impossibility.
Wow. Imposibilidad necesaria. No recuerdo cuando dejé atrás muchos términos o los truqué por otros, ni cuando dejé de pensar que los poemas tenían un potencial ilimitado, que una silla puede hacer infinitas cosas, pero no puede volar. Ni recuerdo cuando escribí por primera vez que quería una silla voladora, un trono volador para ser reina de los murciélagos. Ni cuando dejé de pensar que la solidaridad tenía un potencial limitado. Tampoco recuerdo cuando caí en cuenta que no todo era poesía, pero que la poesía tampoco era toda poesía. Ni recuerdo si alguna vez pude explicar esto con claridad o tenerla. Recuerdo que siempre he tenido poemas que son más poemas, poemas que son más personas y poemas que son más solidaridades. Ay, pero a veces me quedo con los términos viejos porque les tengo demasiado cariño. Necessary impossibility. I don't remember when I left behind many terms or traded them for others, or when I stopped thinking poems had unlimited potential, that a chair could do infinite things but never fly. Nor do I remember when I wrote for the first time that I wanted a flying chair, a flying throne so I could be reina of bats. Nor when I stopped believing that solidarity had limited potential. I also don't remember when I knew that not everything was poetry. But also poetry wasn't all poetry, nor if ever I could explain this with clarity or have it. I remember I've always had poems that are more like poems, poems that are more like people, and poems that are more like solidarities. Aye, but sometimes I stay with the old terms because they've shown me so much love.
I really like that poem, and I love the fact that you read it to us in Spanish, a language I do not know. So when you started to read the poem, I thought, I don't know what she's talking about. That was my first thing. Mm-hmm. Then I thought, no, I'm going to relax. I'm just going to listen to the words. I'm going to listen to the rhythm. I'm going to listen to how it just sounds almost like a piece of music. And then obviously reading the English words, something that I understand. Is that what you want us to experience, or what do you want us to experience?
Maybe a better way to put it. Well, I mean, I want people to experience what they experience. You can't tell people what to experience when they're reading a poem. But, you know, ideally, I do think it's interesting that that switch, that moment from discomfort to perhaps like a certain interpretation of something that is unknown, right? Because I think, you know, this is John Cage piece, where he basically creates a space where there is silence, and then silence isn't really silence, it's all this background noise. And then, you know, it's about narration and how we narrate things that we don't understand. And so I do find that white audiences in general tend to find the musicality in my language very beautiful, which I think is interesting because I could be cussing them out and they wouldn't know.
Exactly.
But I do think there is a notion around Spanish, and there's a notion that Spanish is just like this really beautiful language. And I think that's really coded into especially how we think of the Caribbean and how we think of islands in the Caribbean as places that are beautiful and places that are tourist attractions and things like this. And so I'm not saying that's a wrong way to interpret it, but it's certainly, you know, I think it's common and it's something I've received a lot and I think about it. Yeah.
I remember hearing a poet, I don't remember who it was, though, talking about translation and describing it. And I think this was translating other people's work, was the underside of a carpet. The top side, the side that we see, is probably a little more vibrant. The same threads are underneath, but they don't have that same kind of vibrancy. And I wonder, as someone who translates their own work, whether you feel that or not.
Well, I guess. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely vibrancy and non-vibrancy that we've their way both through the Spanish and the English. Sometimes in the Spanish, there's something that wasn't that vibrant, and then in the English it comes out as something more interesting or something I didn't expect or something that has more of a play on words than the Spanish. And sometimes the translation just kind of falls flat. Yeah.
And some words don't translate, I'm assuming. Mm. I mean, there just isn't sometimes a word for another word.
Many words, especially because... I mean, I guess everywhere, but I feel that in Puerto Rico, our language is full of all these neologisms and these ways of making language more interesting. So those are part of my language. And so I really, I don't translate those.
Just let them be.
Yeah, let them be.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Philadelphia poet laureate Raquel Salas Rivera joining us today on Radio Times to talk about poetry, her life. She's going to read some more poems as well, or they're going to read some more poems as well. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I understand you were born in Puerto Rico, but came to the U.S. as a baby, and then back to Puerto Rico as a teenager?
Yeah. So I was born in Puerto Rico. My parents moved to the United States when I was 6 months old, to Wisconsin.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. I couldn't hear myself for a second. And then after that, they moved to California, where I lived for about 5 years. And then after that, we moved to Nebraska. And then after that, we moved to Alabama. And after that, we moved to Texas. And after that, we moved back to Alabama. And then when I was 14, we moved to Puerto Rico.
Why so much moving?
My parents were both linguists at the time. It was the departments had weird hiring practices. You know, they were just trying to be closer to each other, you know, sort of thing. Yeah.
And is your mom a poet?
My mother is a poet. Yeah, I'm trying to get her to share her work more. She's sharing it a little bit more. My grandfather was a poet, and he was more of a known poet in Puerto Rico. It's hard sometimes living, growing up as the daughter of a well-known poet, you know? So I really get it, you know? It's kind of, it's a lot. It's like a weight to bear, you know?
Well, in fact, you have, I'm going to jump ahead, a poem called Final Scene about you and your mother.
Yeah. I do have a poem called
"You Do."
It's part of a series. Right? Escenario final. Mi madre dice que está muy desmoralizada para escribir poemas sobre la deuda. Su mano aprieta mi corazón dislocado. Me pregunta si leí los poemas que me envió, si me gustaron. Son cortos. Me gustaron, le digo. Sus poemas sobre la deuda son largos como los míos. Igualitos, me dice, y nos lloramos por no matarnos, igualitos. Mi madre nunca dice esto, aunque sí me dice que no puede escribir poemas sobre la deuda, pero no explica, aunque sí llora y me aprieta el corazón, aunque sí escribe poemas que son como los míos sobre la deuda, aunque no lo dicen los poemas, de la deuda se tratan todos, aunque no se lo diga nunca. Final scene. My mother says she's too demoralized to write poems about the debt. Her hand squeezes my dislocated heart. She asks me if I've read the poems she sent me, if I liked them. They're short. I like them, I say. Her poems about the debt are long like mine. They're the same, she says, and we cry so as not to kill each other. Exactly the same. My mother never says this, even when, yes, she says she can't write poems about the debt, but doesn't explain, even when, yes, she cries and squeezes my heart, even when, yes, she writes poems that are like mine about the debt, even though she doesn't say it in the poems. They're all about the debt, even if I never, ever say these words out loud, even then.
Mm-hmm. And again, our guest, Philadelphia Poet Laureate Raquel Salas Rivera, reading from their new book of poems called The Tertiary. And you can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. As you said, having a famous mother poet can be a little daunting if you want to be a poet as well. Is there a point at which you began to write poetry?
Well, I mean, she's not famous, but I hope she will be one day. But she did expose me to poetry, even though it wasn't like a thing that she exposed me more to than, let's say, cinema, which we saw a lot of growing up. She exposed me to a great deal of cinema and art and music in general. I feel that even though we didn't have a lot of money, we did have a lot of wealth in terms of just like exposure to mm-hmm. the arts. I started writing when I was 12. I was in middle school. I had an English teacher that introduced me to Langston Hughes.
Oh, wow.
I read Langston Hughes collected works front to back over and over. I still have that copy. It has some very I should fix it. It has some very rusty like paper clips on the pages that I read over and over, but I kind of have an attachment to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to be a poet. I want to make poems that are like this. I want to be able in three verses to do what Langston Hughes does.
Because of just how he used words or what his poems were about?
Because he made me cry in three verses. Because a total stranger, you know, who was dead, made me cry in three verses, you know. That's incredible to me.
It sure is. Well, even We Two Are Philly, that's your mm-hmm. festival that you're organizing for this summer. I mean, in certain ways, based on Langston Hughes.
Yes, it is.
I too.
Yeah, it is. I'm co-organizing it because I think it's ambitious to think that I can organize six different readings all over Philadelphia by myself. And I don't think that that would actually be a good festival. So I'm co-organizing it with Kerwin Sutherland, Rena Shirali, and Ashley Davis.
And this will be in the summer?
Yes, it will begin on June 3rd. It will end, I believe, August 12th.
Look at me. Oh, wow.
April 12th. No. No.
This is a multilingual city. It's also a sanctuary city. Is mm-hmm. that important to you?
It is very important to me. Puerto Ricans have U.S. citizenship, and so our needs as migrants are different, but we are migrants. I care more about solidarity with people with undocumented peoples than I care about arguing that we should have rights because we're citizens. And I say that because I think that's often an argument for why we should have rights. And I don't think that having basic water, shelter, support, family, home, work should all be contingent on citizenship.
In fact, reading some interviews of you and stories about you, you say you're a Philadelphian, but not necessarily, or maybe, I don't know, do you feel like you're an American too?
No, I do not feel I'm an American. I mean, I'm of the Americas. Right. I think it's really interesting because in Latin America, depending on where you are in the context, being American doesn't mean being from the U.S. always, right? It means being of the Americas, right? Las Americas, right? The continents that are the Americas. I don't identify as an American. I think it's hard to translate the experience of being in Puerto Rico and what that word means. To say you are American means that you are pro-statehood,
or that you are maybe popular. It is already a politics to say you are American in Puerto Rico, because to say you are American means that you identify with the nation that is the colonizing nation, which is the United States of America. So it becomes more than just about citizenship. It becomes about a political position in relation to the question of statehood, independence, or remaining a colony. So it's very loaded. Los Americanos, you know, that's very loaded.
Sure.
Yeah.
Are you a independence? Are you pro-independence? Agnostic? Hardly.
Agnostic. No, I think agnostic is a position that's already, like, neutrality. It's already a position. But I am pro a sort of independence. I'm just not pro an independence that means a different type of colonialism, because many nations throughout Latin America became independent and then became economically dependent through neoliberalism. And so, like, I think there has to be a really concrete idea of what a kind of independence would be. But I do believe in autonomy. Mm-hmm. I don't believe any nation should be subjected to another, just as the United States should not have been subjected to British rule. I do not believe that Puerto Rico should be subjected to the rule of any empire.
Your new book of poems is called The Tertiary. Mm-hmm. There's a reference there. Help us understand the title. Where that comes from.
Yeah, I mean, I say it's a joke. My book is like half jokes, but I feel like maybe it's like you got to be Puerto Rican to get it. I don't know. Or maybe people get it, but sometimes I have to tell people you can laugh, you know, because it's a very tragic book. It's like about what it's like to lose my experience of Puerto Rico, my island as I knew it. I'm wary of saying, like, lose my island, because there are people who are living there and fighting there, and it's still Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. but it has radically changed since the Promesa Bill was passed. So the term, it's from the book is based around a translation of Marx's Capital, and so there's a part in that translation where Marx or his translator, if you want to think of it like that, are like, you know, there are two commodities. Let's say you want to exchange a coat for 50 yards of linen. In order to do that, they have to be equivalent to a third commodity, because they're actually different objects. And that third thing that they have to be equivalent to, a third value is labor. Just like a triangle, right? You know, if you have two sides, it lets you know the third side, and that makes it the triangle, right? And so that's the basis for the title.
I want to have you read some more poems after this short break. And our guest is Raquel Salas Rivera, Philadelphia's Poet Laureate. We are going to take a short break, then get back to our conversation. They have a new book of poetry called The Tertiary. Raquel identifies as queer, non-binary, born in Puerto Rico, came to Philadelphia, actually to graduate school, which is where she lives. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Philadelphia Poet Laureate Raquel Salas Rivera. You can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to join our conversation. Let me read an email from Paul. He says, I'm wondering, what makes these string of words poetry? Is it the visceral, organic feel of it, or is it something else, something about what the words mean? What makes a poem a poem?
What makes a poem a poem? Wow. I mean, that's a question that many a graduate program has been organized around.
And you went to Penn Graduate School.
Yeah, I sure did. I should know by now, right? I should have a concrete answer. This is what poetry is. So I think that what I like about poetry is that continues to be a question. I think it's really important that it continues to be a question. I'm not going to say that other artistic forms don't ask similar questions, like what makes art art, right? And that people are constantly pushing against that. I think the Philadelphia Museum of Art has an incredible Marcel Duchamp collection. At the early beginning of the 20th century, one of the people that liked asking that question, right? For me, right? For me.
Sure.
For me, you can think for me as a poet or for me as Poet Laureate of Philadelphia. I like poetry that reorders the world in such a way that I no longer recognize it, but that does so by reordering how I think of language.
I like that.
Yeah, I like it too.
I'd love to have you read another poem from the tertiary. Coats are not exchanged for coats.
No se cambia una chaqueta por una chaqueta. Tomemos dos mercancías, por ejemplo, 50 años de trabajo y una deuda acumulada por 50 años. Como propietaria de la primera, decides llevarla al Caribe Hilton bancario donde daría mi vida por pagar esta deuda. Pero te explican que no da. Así como la deuda y los 50 años de trabajo son valores de uso cualitativamente diferentes, los trabajos por medio de los cuales llegan a existir, el del inversionista y el del colonizado. Tu vida no es suficiente. Tendrás que pagarla con el trabajo de tus hijos y los hijos de tus hijos. Digamos que les dices nunca tuve porque nunca quise que heredaran mi deuda a aquellos que apenas saben distinguir entre coquito y leche, pero te explican que aunque no tengas linaje, la heredarán tus vecinas, el perro que saquea tu basura, doña Sofía con su rosario luminoso, tu abuela que apenas sale a la farmacia, Angelía que aún espera tu libro, Luis que finalmente tiene empleo pero con deuda todavía, el tipo que te asaltó por 10 pesos. Imagínate que vuelves con tus vecinos, con tu abuela, con el perro que a veces rebusca la basura, con Angelía, con Luis y dices, he aquí mis herederos. ¿Aceptarás nuestro pago? ¿Darás por finalizada nuestra deuda? ¿Borrarás nuestros nombres del sistema? Pero te dicen, te faltan los ríos. El río Oaxaca, el río Camuy, el río Cibuco, el río de Bayamón, el río Puerto Nuevo, el río Grande Eloísa, el río Herrera, el río Mamey, el río Sabana, el río Fajardo, el río Daguao, el río Santiago, el río Blanco, el río Macao, el río Seco, el río Maunabo, etcétera, etcétera, etcétera. Ellos serán tus herederos. Esta vez decides adelantarte, recorres todo Puerto Rico como un espectro, agarras puñales de lo que sea, sombrillas de gasolinera, piedra caliza, actas de nacimiento, tiendas quebradas, etcétera, etcétera, etcétera. Vuelves al banco con tu isla tan densamente ingerida que toses semáforos y entierros y dices, he aquí todo lo que cabe entre el mar Caribe y el Atlántico Norte, he aquí mi imaginario. Pero te dicen, debes la nada, tu cuenta tiene un balance negativo. A cambio de esta deuda solo aceptamos chaquetas. Pero esto sí que no lo tienes, porque casi nunca hace frío en Puerto Rico. Digamos que vas hasta Filadelfia a buscar las chaquetas que necesitan las abuelas, las Angelías, el río Monago, etc. Trabajas duro, buscas una licencia con dirección renovada, compras 3, 4, 500 chaquetas, vas a la sucursal local y dices, aquí las tengo. Quisiera pagar aquella deuda. Pero sin mirar te contestan, aquí en Philly no aceptamos chaquetas. Supongamos que en la caja de pasteles le envías las chaquetas a tu madre con una notita que lee, pago, deuda de Puerto Rico. Y mami, tras decodificar tu letra, carga la caja hasta la sucursal del Banco Popular, el Caribe Hilton Bancario o lo que sea Bank, donde la miran mal y le indican antes de que pueda decir palabra alguna. Para entregar chaquetas, utilice la fila número 3. Imagínate que es una fila larga, larguísima, casi interminable. Una fila de 50 años.
Coats are not exchanged for coats. Let us take two commodities, such as 50 years of work and one debt accumulated over 50 years. As proprietor of the first, you decide to take it to Caribe Hilton Banking, where I offer my life to pay this debt. But they explain that it's not enough. Just as the debt and the 50 years of work have use values that are qualitatively different, so are the two forms of labor that produce them, that of the investor and that of the colonized. Your life is not enough. You will have to pay with the labor of your children and your children's children. Let's say you tell them, I never had any because I never wanted to make heirs of those who barely know the difference between milk and coquito. But they explain that even if you don't have a lineage, your neighbors, the dog that plunders your trash, Doña Sofia with her luminous rosary, your abuela that barely leaves the house to go to the pharmacy, Angelia that still awaits your book, Luis that finally has a job but still has debts to pay, that guy who mugged you for $10 will inherit. Imagine that you come back with your neighbors, with your abuela, with the dog that sometimes searches your trash, with Angelia, with Luis, and say, here are my heirs. Do you accept our payment? Will you terminate our debt? Will you erase our names from the system? But they say, where are the rivers? El río Oaxaca, el río Camuy, el río Cibuco, el río de Bayamón, el río Puerto Nuevo, el río Grande de Loíza, el río Herrera, el río Mamey, el río Sabana, el río Fajardo, el río de Aguao, el río Santiago, el río Blanco, el río Macao, el río Seco, el río Maunabo, etc., etc., etc. They will be your heirs. This time you decide to get ahead. Like a specter, you haunt all of Puerto Rico. You grab handfuls of whatever, gasoline station umbrellas, limestone, birth certificates, shut down shops, etc., etc., etc. You go back to the bank with your island so densely ingested that you cough up burials and streetlights and say, here I have all that fits. Between the Caribbean Sea and the North Atlantic, here I have my imaginary. But they say, you owe nothingness. Your account has a negative balance. In exchange for this debt, we only accept coats. But this you definitely don't have, because it's almost never cold in Puerto Rico. Let's say you go to Philadelphia to look for the coats much needed by the abuelas, the angelias, the Rio Manao, etc. You work hard, look for a license with a renewed address, buy 300, 400, 500 coats, go to the local branch and say, here they are, I would like to pay that debt. But without looking up, they answer, here in Philly, we don't accept coats. Let's suppose that in the pasteles box, you send the coats to your mother with a note that reads, payment, Puerto Rican debt. And mommy, after decoding your handwriting, carries the box to the local branch of the Banco Popular, Caribe Hilton Banking, or Lo Que Sea Bank, where they give her a look, and before she can say a word, indicate, to turn in coats, use line number 3. Imagine that it is a longer, almost interminable line, a line that spans 50 years.
Mm, powerful poem. What inspired that? There's so much.
Oh, man. Just the feeling of just, what is a debt of a country? What is a whole country in debt? What is an entire place that for years has been producing wealth somehow in debt? A place that produced the cane that has generated capitalism and allowed the United States to become the rich and wealthy country it is. What does it mean that that country is in debt to the U.S.?
And the impossibility of paying off that debt.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's that is the history of so many countries, right, to have debts they can never, ever, ever pay off. And yet, ironically, one of the countries that has the highest debts in the world is the United States. Mm. But that is a debt that will never get paid.
That is our guest, Philadelphia poet laureate Raquel Salas Rivera. We are talking about poetry and a bit about her life. And again, she's got, they've got a new book of poems called The Tertiary. And you can see me stumbling over pronouns here. And I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, and it probably gets really tiresome for you. You like the word, I mean, you are they. You choose not to be gender identified, or it's a more gender neutral word to describe yourself. And you can hear me already. I've stumbled over that word. Help us understand what this means to you.
So, I mean, it's a tricky thing, right? If you were to ask me, if you were a person who had never seen the ocean, you were to say, what is the ocean like? Describe the ocean, right? And I were to say, well, it's not the forest, and it's not the desert. Would you know what the ocean is?
Right?
You would still have no idea what the ocean is. And so, you know, my gender to me is very concrete, and I've actually really searched through the language to make a language for what that gender is. But to say that it's non-binary, all I'm saying is it's not the forest, right? It's not male or whatever. And it's not the desert. It's not female. But that doesn't really say much about my gender. And so, you know, they, them is a kind of placeholder for the limitations of language in many ways. Yeah.
And I feel that limitation. Mm-hmm. As I said, I think for many people, I'll speak for many people, there is this kind of default. And we, you know, we decide based on a whole bunch of stuff that this is a man and this is a woman, and we're going to react to them in a certain kind of way. So I really appreciate the idea that there are other ways of being who you are.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there are definitely many ways that we have amply explored collectively in this world and in this reality and in this context of thinking of man and woman, right? We are constantly talking about what those are and what the limits of those are and what is a man and what is a woman. But seldom do we have a collective conversation about what is, right. What are the ways of being non-binary in the world. So I definitely think that we can make a little room for that. Yeah.
Well, and as you say, we is so inclusive, whereas mm-hmm. I, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very embracing word, we.
Yeah, no, it's definitely like a shift from like, well, this is my identity to like, where are the spaces in which I can talk with others about my identity? Because identity is not just like me in a room with myself. It's also me in dialogue with the world.
I'm also thinking of language, the Spanish language, where there are gendered words. Mm-hmm. There are male and female words. American or English is less that way. French is that way as well. You're mm-hmm. smiling at mm-hmm. me. But do you wrestle with that? Is that an issue for you?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm lucky. My parents were linguists, so I
that's true.
I'm constantly talking to them about these things, or at least my mother, who is still linguist. So, yeah, I wrote and presented on the use of non-binary pronouns in Spanish because there have been different moments, right? I actually have a manuscript that is centered around the X because the X was one of the original forms of expressing non-binary. But many have argued, well, like Latinx, for example, sure. Right? Comes from that. It actually comes from people who speak Spanish trying to find a way of talking about or being gender inclusive. And so, so the X, many have argued, is difficult to pronounce. I don't totally disagree with that. And so at this point, there are many non-binary people in the Spanish-speaking world that use non-binary pronouns on a regular basis, and they often use the E. For example, instead of ella, it would be ella. And ella es una persona bella, you know. And so I try to think, well, you know, it's going to be a little more challenging because of the way that, you know, the language is set up. But that doesn't mean it's impossible. No. And in fact, people are doing it every day. Yeah.
And languages are fluid. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. we don't.
I use female pronouns in Spanish. I did for a time use ella and ex, but, you know, I'm just like, I've really embedded in certain poetic traditions. Mm. I just got used to it. I don't care if people use ella, ella, él with me. That's kind of irrelevant. So weirdly, I get some sort of way about it in English and not in Spanish, but we bear very different relations to the languages we speak.
Well, and it gets me, we're almost out of time here, but it gets me thinking about how I think all of us translate. I mean, we go through the world and we're translating experiences that we have with other people or interactions or what we see on the street. There's a constant translating that to our own lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially if you've migrated here, mm-hmm. Your entire existence is a mode of translation.
Sure. Sure. How often do you go back to Puerto Rico?
As often as possible. I was back there in March to be part of a queer colloquium that happens mm-hmm. every other year, every 2 years. And I'm going back now at the end of May.
Right. And I've only seen pictures. I've interviewed people who were there since the hurricane, and just the amount of devastation is just overwhelming.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah. All my family's there, so... You know.
Are they doing all right? In spite of, I mean, do they have electricity?
Are they doing all right? Sure. That's, yeah, sure. Yeah. They're doing all right through and in devastation, as mm-hmm. we often do.
Well, on that note, Philadelphia Poet Laureate Raquel Salas Rivera, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Time.
Thank you for having me here.
You're very welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. And you can download a podcast of the show. If you want to do that, go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. Bob Ball's the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and John Ahrens, with assistance from Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.